Welcome to Roguecast, the official podcast of Rogues Gallery. We'll talk comics for the week, as well as whatever news is on our pop cultural radar. I'm Randy.
I'm Nick.
This is Dave.
And now, on with the show. Hello and welcome back to the Roguecast. We've been having a conversation, as always, about Shang-Chi.
Shang-Chi,
and
yes.
Coke Zero.
And Coke Zero.
So, y'all quick explain this to me. Even though Marvel movies are not, like, doing any big thing right now, they went ahead and stuck these dudes on some soda?
Well, it's not specific to Marvel movies. It's basically just the Marvel universe.
Oh, I thought it was all Marvel movies characters.
No, because, like...
Is it comic art?
No, I mean, it's the art from the MCU.
Is it?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because I know, like, Deadpool...
Yeah.
And you said Deadpool's not in the MCU.
Correct. Oh, no. I've been... Coke Zero has snuck its way in.
That's his first canonical appearance.
His first canonical appearance. Deadpool appeared in a tortilla and in Coke Zero.
Actually, that's the kind of thing that if they were to reference it in the movie, I'd have to kind of respect.
His first appearance.
Like, if they had one of those little old pop-up things and it's like, first appearance, Coke Zero
number one.
In your local HEB.
So I have to look. I thought it was not just like the...
I don't really know. All I know is, we were talking about this, a friend of mine brought some to a game night and Nick got some.
Yep.
You know, 12-pack with Marvel cans, which sounds cool. But
here comes the variety,
you
think.
But the two 12-packs, each of the ones, Nick got only Shang-Chi.
It's true.
And my buddy Mike got only Captain America.
It's so weird.
You want a variety pack.
It's the, like,
you
want to
drink all the Avengers.
Even here, yes.
Yeah. Well, there are some, like...
It's meant to remind you of the enjoyment of the entire franchise,
yes.
Not to inundate you with Shang-Chi.
Oh, no, all I got was Kang. The Kang cans have been recalled.
You better watch those.
Well, a lot of them are MCU, but then they throw in like Blade, who hasn't premiered in the MCU.
Okay,
Moon Knight is MCU. Daredevil is not them.
Are you seeing pictures of these?
Yeah, they're just like kind of black, white, and red versions.
I can't tell on the Blade one. Does it look like Wesley Snipes?
Yeah, is it the comic art or is it movie art? That's the question.
Or is it art that's meant to kind of look like it could be a comic or like
this
movie?
Is the hard hitting journalism y'all turn in for.
Yeah. All right. So let's get these people past the soda.
Also, who drinks zero caffeine?
I know, it's crazy. By the way, I did think it was odd that the MCU moved on to just so they left movies and TV and now just in soda form.
Yeah.
But it's 2024. Weird shit's happening.
A narrative's a narrative, Randy.
Yes. Yeah. Look, as long as the MCU continues, I'm good with it. As long as I get my D-Man Cokes.
You'll never get a D-Man Coke.
You'll never get a D-Man Coke.
Give me the big D.
All right. Reminder, the summer reading challenge is still going on for teens and youths.
Come get your reading packet. And
we've had 8 people turn in so far, so there's still 2 more owlbear coins to be claimed. And after that, there's still cool prizes.
Yep.
True.
Plus the prize of reading. Plus, you have not seen the joy on Serena's face. Serena looks through every one of those packets to see what the kids wrote about the books.
Yep. Yes.
She is very much enjoying this.
Yes, these are not just filed away for posterity.
No.
For our surveillance state. We've had a lot of good interactions lately. Awesomely, there was a kid in yesterday. I don't know if this was specifically tied into. I think it was not tied into it, the PAX. But it was a kid who was like, I don't know, he couldn't have been more than like 6 or something like that. But he was already getting into like scary movies and stuff and into, what was it, The Haunted Mansion. I guess, is there a show or a movie or something?
There was a
more recent
movie.
Yeah, maybe it was one of those. And they're like, the mom was like, show her what you say. And it was like something from it where someone's like, you know, all mortals will die here. Or, you know, it was the opening sequence or something. And but a little kid saying that, very adorable.
Mm-hmm. Also, that kid is scarred for life now.
No, he's just going to grow up to be like us.
It's true.
You know, scarred for life.
Yes.
In terms of games, we got restocks of a couple big games. We got Heat, which is the push-your-luck driving game.
Yep.
Finally have that in stock. I finally got my own copy. I love this game. It's one of my favorites.
We got more of the expansion, too,
and
right?
We got more of the expansion as well.
Yep.
And highly recommend this game. I can always pitch it to anybody if you come in. I will tell you all the basics of it, but it's a great game. It's been on my table regularly since it came out.
Yeah.
By the same publisher, Days of Wonder, that does Ticket to Ride.
Yep.
And speaking of Ticket to Ride, the Ticket to Ride Legend of the West, which is the legacy version of Ticket to the Ride, also came back in.
Right.
This game is a legacy version of the very popular train game Ticket to Ride, but also, most notably, it is by designers Alan R. Moon, who designed Ticket to Ride,
mm-hmm.
and I think, is it Rob DeVoe who does legacy games?
The name sounds right.
I believe the guy who kind of invented them with Risk.
So this is like the all-stars of gaming building a game together. And that's pretty cool. Really, really good.
Very cool.
Have
you played this one?
I have not. Legacy games I have trouble finding time for.
Yeah.
Well, I want
it's
to.
It's a commitment.
I still haven't played Sagrada Legacy, and I bought that from Kickstarter. We got a game called Let's Go to Japan, which is a touring Japan game, which is super fun. It's an AEG game. A game called Sand, which is by the guys who do Bang and some of those other games. A game called Manhattan Project's War Machine, where you're trying to build the war machine.
Mm-hmm.
You want to build the military-industrial complex.
Well, that's an interesting one.
And then a game called Far Away, which is from Pandasaurus Games. They make a lot of good games. This is weirdly like mushroom-themed. There's a lot of mushroom-themed games lately.
Go figure.
Yeah.
People are into mycology.
They do love mycology. I mean, Discovery started the whole thing.
That's true.
Yeah.
You know the deal that the character Paul Stamets is based on real life?
I know his name is actually Paul Stamets.
Mycologist Paul Stamets.
Yep.
Yeah.
Then there's Last of Us.
There's Last of Us, yep.
The Last of Us
kind of came in on the coattails of the popular Star Trek Discovery.
Yes. No one really talks about Last of Us, but everybody's talking about Star Trek
That's
Discovery.
Exactly
yes,
correct. Yeah. No one even needs to talk about it further because obviously there would be no dissent.
Why bother? All right. Let's talk about comics for the week. It is a lighter week than last time.
By the way, the mushrooms were actually invented by Mario, as we
know. Oh, that's right. Yeah. Yeah.
Goombas.
Yeah. Yeah. let's talk about comics for the week.
Yep.
It is a lighter week for Blood Hunt. Last week there was like seven chapters.
Yep.
This week there are only two, and one of those is because we were delayed.
Correct.
So Doctor Strange number 15, we finally got our copies. And this is a pretty notable one. It picks up right after Blood Hunt number one.
Yep.
It's had a big, very, extremely notable ending.
Yep. And goes in as interesting enough. McKay is writing this one, so it is very tied into it. And we get a little more of Blade talking and monologuing. He's talking to Clea and Doctor Strange. And I think Dave may have pinned down, we're not going to say it, but Dave may have pinned down what may be going on with Blade.
It's true.
We have a theory.
We think we figured it out. It fits a number of the facts.
And if it doesn't come to pass, we're going to be mad at Jeff.
If you want to hear the spoiler theory, you can ask Dave in person. He'll be like, make sure nobody else is around. He'll tell you his theory.
That's right. I will lead you into the darkened bathroom and discuss it with you.
Just film me once.
All right. We'll do it on the sales floor because Randy's going to make a big thing out of it.
We got calls. We got phone calls.
Step into the secret bathroom.
The other thing we got is Amazing Spider-Man Blood Hunt, which I guess picks up from last week's Amazing Spider-Man.
Yes.
Again, directly.
Yep.
That literally ended with he dealt with the vampire issue of the moment. And then it's like he turned a corner and the lizard is just there in an alleyway, like right in his face.
Man, I hate when I turn the corner and the lizard's there.
Speak for yourself. I like the lizard.
Oh.
Kirk Connor's not a bad guy at heart.
But the lizard is. He wants to turn everybody into lizards. And possibly eat you.
Does he want to turn people into lizards?
I thought that was his thing. It's a thing he's done.
He's tried to do that. He did that in the movie as well. The Andrew Garfield.
But it was in the original comics, I think he did.
Did he?
If I could be as cool a lizard as he is, I would accept his proposition.
Oh, I see.
You kind of go
gonna,
mad and kill
Dave, him. you're gonna turn on us all and join the lizards?
Yep, and then you can step into my lizard lounge, where I will tell you secrets.
Your lizard secrets?
Dave's lizard lounge.
So...
Spoiler zone.
I want to say one of the guest stars, let me say the guest star, she's in like page four, Misty Knight.
Yep.
Yeah.
Joining forces with Spider-Man and a surprising ally to deal with, and you will be unsurprised to learn Morbius is involved, because, you know, vampires, Spider-Man, Morbius.
Yep.
I like this. It kind of riffs on a thing they did in Midnight Suns with Morbius, which I thought was kind of cool.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway,
the Midnight Suns video game is what you're talking
Midnight
about.
Midnight Suns video game. Yep. Then we've got a one-shot from Jonathan Hickman and Sanford Green called Doom, and it is about Dr. Doom.
But you know what it's also about? Well, I was going to say Valeria.
It is also Valeria, but it is also Galactus.
Right. So this is set in a kind of a far-flung future.
Yep.
Without saying
something's
too much,
happened.
Galactus may have decimated a lot of things and be in a desperate state. And Doom begins with Valeria, that is to say, Reed Richards' daughter Valeria, but who has been kind of like the
she's the goddaughter
of Doom, and has at times been raised by him, so she's got a connection to him. He apparently took his shot at stopping Galactus and got wrecked.
Yep.
But only in ways only Doom could, kept from dying. And she revives him, and then they're kind of like, where do we go from here?
I thought it was really good, actually.
I am not a Hickman man, and so I was not as into it, but there's some interesting stuff in there. If you want to see kind of Hickman explore some of those cosmic ideas and be like, oh, well, who might be the herald of Doom, or not Doom, but Galactus in one possible future timeline? How does Doom challenge him? The connection between, I think, Valeria and Doom is really interesting and kind of important to it.
Which I think was a big thing in his FF run.
That makes sense.
In Hickman's run.
And there's also some really good cartooning from Sanford Green.
Yeah. It's a great vehicle for his art.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I feel like people who are Doom fans might want to just pick this one up. It's a good standalone.
There is a Venom Separation Anxiety. This is actually the next one in the Lethal Protector series. This is...
kind of calling back his early days.
Yeah, David Michelinie, the original writer. Gerardo Sandoval does some very nice art. And it is a flashback series. It takes place during the early days of Eddie Brock.
Yeah, I've been told that something, at least when I was making this, writing up the solicit for it to make a sign, that it has something that like talks about an early sort of test, putting to the test of the connection between the symbiote and Brock. Yeah. It's kind of most famous host. So yeah.
We got Godzilla 70th Anniversary. Which has it's a one shot. It is an anthology story. Most notable, maybe, in that it's got a story written and drawn by James Stokoe, who did Godzilla: The Half Century War.
Yep.
This is a sort of an interlude from that in 1971 called The Half Century Boar.
I have to read it because Half Century War is a really good one.
Yep.
Yeah,
I believe also
that one was really good.
Our local talent Matt Frank contributes.
Matt Frank has the writing and written and drawn.
Yep.
There is Danny Lohr, who is currently writing the Blade or the Dracula series for Bloodhunt, has a story in here. Dan DiDio with art by Jello Jones.
Did you say Joel Jones or Jello Jones?
Jello Jones.
I just heard syllables.
Joel Jones is okay. What I was saying. Anyway, lots of cool art, lots of short stories, kind of a cool little mini Godzilla anthology.
Right, we talked about this. Also, is Godzilla's year. So
also some great covers.
Yes, there's both the scary cover and the kind of, I'm going to only say slightly campy cover that kind of calls back his earlier looks, where he's chomping down on a train.
Subtitled, you put that train down.
Yes.
Put that train back where you found it, or so help me.
And it looks like he's not letting it go.
No, it does not, no. Netflix has a new Masters of the Universe series. I've lost track of this.
I have two. I think there was a second series, and I believe this is just like a four-part like mini-series. Yeah.
It is called Revolution. I don't know the deal, but I do know that this mini-series from Dark Horse is co-written by, or it's scripted by, Tim Sheridan, and it looks like some of the other writers. So this is like canon. It is written by the show writers.
Okay.
And it seems to focus on Hordak.
Yep, and I believe. And also young Skeletor. He's the blue guy with the beard.
Is Hordak like his mentor?
I believe they have a connection or rivalry in it, but I don't know the details of it. Okay.
So yeah, this is a prequel to the Netflix series.
Yep.
There's also, I think, some favorites hit this week. What If Aliens number 3. I think Dave, you and I are both kind of enjoying this campy vibe.
Oh, I loved it.
Yeah.
Yes. We all three are enjoying
this. Nick and I were talking about this off mic a little while ago, and we're like, the thing that it's doing, even though it's a little borderline campy with, this is the What If Burke Lived series.
Yeah.
About Weasley Burke and a sort of, in his later years, a scheme to both kind of somehow maybe get back at Weyland-Yutani, maybe reunite himself with his daughter, but particularly he's actually trying to help his wife out, who, she's in like suspended animation, essentially hypersleep because he has cancer.
He's also trying to save face a little bit. He's been branded the worst possible human being in
right,
all
he took the
world.
Fall for it.
Yeah.
Now, he is a weasel in it.
He's got, but
they've assembled a kind of a fun, colorful cast here. He's got a, at this point, slightly snarky android that's assisting him. He himself is trying to, in some ways, do the right thing, but through the Burke method.
Yep.
And there is some ridiculous and fun stuff in here.
But I think that's kind of what makes it unique and interesting because this is not...
Yes, you were saying it's not something we've seen.
It's not something we've
seen.
They
never
let
humor into the alien stuff unless it's just, like, ridiculous.
It's a gallows humor in a lot of ways.
Yeah, there's the opening sequence of this, which is Burke has opened, is exposing a guy to an alien face hugger. It's coming out of the egg, and the guy is rapidly trying to talk him down. And it kind of works in a way, but it was an unexpected conversation.
Well, in the last episode, he tried to expose multiple people, but couldn't until this guy walked.
Right, they're like, let's find somebody...
Oh, I can do this guy.
Somebody nobody likes. And when we talked about this, too, he's almost as much Paul Reiser comedian...
Very much so, yes.
...as he is Burke.
Yes.
And so there is some of that, his style of humor and stuff like that, and it's very funny. Yeah. I really like it.
I really like it, too.
Ultimate X-Men gets its third issue, introduced its third mutant.
Yep.
And they use the word mutant. Right?
I thought it was a cool third mutant, too. Okay. I was surprised, because there is a Marvel connection to
it. I saw or two things in this one. I have not read it all the way through, but I saw a few things that made me want to go back and read all three of the current issues and take in the whole story.
Her artwork is just killer in that.
It is.
So good.
You know what? I also like the little notes she does at the end.
Yeah,
that
sort
are, like,
of
talk about
Japanese culture.
Yeah,
lot
she's
of
like, here's a little sort of rhyme that kids say that's almost like, here's their our Ouija board kind of game.
Here's
a little bit about like some importance of like, wasn't there something with chopsticks?
There's chopsticks. There was also like a badge or something that kids would give, not in high school, but it was like junior high.
Right, like it was like the button from somebody's shirt. And it's almost like a token of affection you remove the first button from your shirt and you give it to the person you like. And it was like, oh, what an interesting series of cultural sort of touchstones that we just don't tend to know
about.
I'm
really enjoying it.
So,
next part of House of Brainiac, which is, there's some fun stuff going on in this. I've been keeping up with this. I don't know if y'all are reading this.
I kind of fell behind.
So, Superman and Lobo are fighting it out with the Zarnian general in space.
Okay.
Which has some super fun moments. And, on Brainiac's ship, Superboy and Supergirl have escaped their cages, but they did not re-embiggen. So they're shrunk down and they don't have their powers.
Oh, nice.
So it's Honey, I Shrunk the Super
it's
People?
Shrunk, and so they're
the
trying to they're trying to rescue, but they're actually doing... They have to go to help for people who you would not expect to go to help for. In fact, David reminded me of our Superman role-playing game that we played.
Huh? Very cool.
Who do they go to help for?
You would know if you think about it.
Yeah, if you think about it.
But anyway.
Okay,
I'll show you after. But yeah, it's been really good. I'm really enjoying this story, and it's going to lean into... Absolute Power, which is the big DC crossover thing.
Right.
Another new issue of G.I. Joe, Real American Hero.
The Larry Hama one. Yeah.
Which has some really fun... It is weird to me to have Snake Eyes talking. I don't like
because
it.
Because it's in, like... He ended up being in, like, a cloned
body
of his, so he didn't have all the
damage
to it.
Yeah.
But there's also, like, Zartan is being targeted by... Serpentor and his group. There's a whole lot of like Cobra Civil War stuff going on.
Yeah.
Like Serpentor and his mutants and the robots are all working together, and Cobra Commander's doing a thing, and Destro's doing a thing, and Zartan is like choosing his sides. It is bonkers, y'all, and I'm really enjoying it. And the artist Paul Pelletier, who did some really great stuff in the 90s at Marvel. So
I feel like occasionally it's nice when comics go a little off the rails. Aliens, What If?
Yeah.
This G.I. Joe comic, a little off the rails is good.
Dave reminds me that there is a new Spawn book this week.
Yep, I guess he's probably appeared before a character called Monolith, who's like this big monstrosity of a... Like, think Hulk, Hulk were a Spawn.
Right.
So, and it's like set in the future, though. He's like sci-fi warrior hero. I feel like there's kind of a... Like, this goes for all Spawn, I suppose, but there's a bit of a sci-fi for Zeta vibe.
Yeah, of
course. He's throwing down beatdowns.
I only remember big, giant villain Spawn, which was like overt kill.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I also wanted to mention, Randy, Fish Flies from Jeff Lemire. It has been some delays, I think, in this, but I want to say I just randomly read this issue, even though I had read the previous one, but it was hazy in my head.
Is this the finale?
Nope. There's got to be at least one more.
Okay.
I feel like it is a 7-issue series. I'm not bothered about that, though.
But this has huge reveals in it. Like, I guess it more or less reveals kind of what's going on and why the sort of magical realism events kind of occurred. There's a flashback, and it's actually explained pretty clearly, but it's cool and weird.
I love Lemire's artwork.
Yeah, so he also does this interesting one in this that's a little bit more stylistically different. It's these watercolor sort of flashbacks to the reveals.
They look like they're green toned. That's cool.
Yeah, And then on the collection front, I think this maybe the most notable one is that there's a nice hardcover, two beautiful different versions of it, of James Tynion's Universal Monsters Dracula.
Yeah.
That was his, you know, James Tynion's obviously kind of like the horror writer of the moment, but he did his own spin on the, specifically the movie Dracula.
Right.
And did his rethink. The quote on the front is pretty good from Robert Kirkman. He says, "The Dracula comic I've wanted all my life."
And worth noting that we got enough of them that every one of them comes with a signed book plate with a sign by the writer and artist.
Yeah, that's is really cool. Super cool.
And then do you want to mention the other trade?
Yeah, just a kind of a quirky one here for probably younger readers more, but for maybe anybody too as well. It's one of those choose-your-own-adventure graphic novels. This is they've been doing at least a few of these before, I think.
Yeah.
This one is has your character, you, the person, visiting Stonehenge and getting involved in a sort of adventure, which I couldn't quite tell if there's, like, time dilation and changes and stuff like that.
I bet there's time travel.
There's druids. There's some magic stuff. It looks pretty cool.
That's cool.
There were two things that wrapped up from Marvel this week. The Mace Windu miniseries, which is a pretty fun sort of pre-Jedi Council Mace Windu adventure by Mark Bernardin.
He was Jedi Knight.
Yeah. It was fun. And then the finale of Weapon X-Men. This is actually one of my favorite things I've read this year. We've got all four issues of it. If it sounds at all interesting, you can pick the whole thing up.
It's the multiverse Wolverine.
It is a version of Phoenix who is trying to stop a version of Onslaught made up of Phoenix and Magneto.
Yeah.
And so she recruits Wolverines from different worlds. The Old Man Logan, Zombie Wolverine, Earth-X Wolverine, Weapon-X Wolverine, and a new Jane Howlett, the female Wolverine.
Right.
A female steampunk Wolverine, basically.
Yep.
And, suffice to say, there's sort of a big twist in this one as one of the Wolverines sort of goes rogue, and they have the big throwdown with Onslaught, and it's a very satisfying ending, and actually kind of sweet in its way with some funny bits toward the end as well.
You're saying he turns into rogue?
He does not turn into rogue.
Okay.
But no, I was very pleased with the ending. It's a good solid four-issue series. People should check this one out.
So Spider-Man variants are the Spider-Verse.
Yep.
Wolververse doesn't quite work, no. I think. You call it like the Harry-Verse?
I'd call it the Claw-Verse.
Adamantium-Verse is a bit of a mouthful. Well, we're going to workshop this
one,
though.
We'll work on it.
How about the Logan-Verse?
The Logan-Verse makes the most sense.
That might work.
And then I have two more books to add. The third and final issue of Batman Dylan Dog.
Yep.
Right. Hit. Stellar artwork and really fun. And then the second issue of the book Red Coat, which is Geoff Johns's Ghost Machine universe,
right?
Which was a lot of fun.
He's an immortal British soldier from the Revolutionary War who's an asshole.
Who's an asshole and is working with a kid who is actually Albert Einstein.
Okay.
Okay.
I've always wondered what an asshole from the Revolution would do when he was hanging out with Einstein.
Me too. Weird. How weird.
Nick, those are very international picks. Well done.
Yes.
All right. We're going to take a break, and we're going to come back and talk about some TV and some movie news. All right. So we're going to start by talking about trailers. Let's start with a little bit of a weird one. This is an ABC show. It's just a teaser. It's like maybe...
Like 30 seconds.
30 seconds.
Yeah.
And it is called, what is it, High...
Something?
We should
we should probably
High
look
Potential.
This one up.
High Potential, thank you. It's not about weed.
No.
Really, these days.
With the star in it, I thought it could be.
So this is Caitlin Olson, who was in Always Sunny and Always... And The Mick. I don't know if you saw The Mick.
Yeah, The Mick was great.
She's great. She's very funny. She's a very good actress. This is more of a comedy drama a little bit.
Yeah.
Slash procedural.
So it looks procedural, and it's by Drew Goddard. Yeah. A.K.A. the guy from Operation Overlord and...
Cabin in the Woods? He directed that, right?
Yeah. So he's a Whedon. He's from the Whedon School.
Yep.
Right.
And...
He's a great writer.
It's about a single mom who's actually like...
She's a single mom housekeeper, but she's
intelligent.
She has a high IQ, and she helps the police solve crimes.
Right.
Whether they want it or not.
Right, and there's clearly a little bit of quirkiness to her.
I think this fits into like the category of Bones and Elsbeth.
Yeah, it looks like that.
Castle.
It's not what I would have thought Caitlin Olsen would be doing, but it's a fun, quirky little teaser. I'll consider watching this.
The pedigree. I will watch.
Yeah,
probably.
I'll give this a look. I am allergic to procedurals at this point.
You watch Elsbeth.
But I, yes, I sort of watch Elizabeth.
Oh, really?
I love that character, and I do not like her show.
Really?
Yeah. I really hate
the King's doing it.
I hate the premise so much.
No.
I really hate the premise every time I have to bump against the premise because I love the character.
Have you watched any of the recent ones?
I'm two episodes behind, I think.
Okay, there's some stuff that's happened.
All right, well, at any rate, the Kings are at their best when they're doing something like Evil, which is less procedural. Which, it's procedural, sort of, but it's more like X-Files procedural.
Which, right. Reminder, that is coming, the final season hits in June, I believe.
Yep. Looking forward to that.
I know, I want it now.
Yep.
It has been, I have to say, one of the most watchable shows of like the last 10 years. Just really always kind of fun and weird.
Well, I will say this, the Kings wrapped up Good Fight pretty well.
They did.
So I think they will wrap up Evil pretty well.
That's
as well.
Cool.
They will not answer all their questions. No. That is not a thing they do.
Right.
There are things where you're like, wait, what happened to that? Nothing happened to that. They got tired of it.
Right.
But it is always entertaining.
Yep. I feel like there's a fair amount on Evil that I can say, like, well, I think I got the gist of what was going on there.
Yeah.
I'm like, yes, they dropped some, there was some stuff that suggested, oh, maybe it was supernatural, but I think in this one case we can say it wasn't, and in this case we can say it was.
Yeah.
You know, but they were actually communing with big devils and demons and stuff. I have to, like,
hard to write that one out. But I think they do sometimes run into things that aren't.
That's true. They do.
You know, off mic, I was talking about William Gibson, the writer.
Yep.
And his writing, he tends to, like, do things where he doesn't spell things out for the readers. And sometimes I'm not sure he knows what's going on. I think he's, like, here's a vague idea. The Kings do the same kind of thing. That whole thing with, like, the body switching or the brain swapping or whatever. I don't know what happened with that. It just went away.
Body switching?
Remember her mom had, like, been, like, blood switched or something?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And, like, that's just gone. I don't know what happened to that. And I think the Kings sometimes do that. They're like, well, it makes sense to us.
Right. It was clear that there was some sort of induction thing into, was it Leland? Is that his name?
Yeah, and into the various, like, cults thing. That were...
But we were like, oh, I can't wait to learn more about exactly what strange ritual that was. Never seen again.
Nope, never seen again. Never going to be. Anyway, high potential. Looks like it has some potential.
Yes.
Maybe not high potential. That's you're daring critics to write bad headlines at that point. You don't name your social or something like that. Francis Ford Coppola, filmmaker, made some movies people might know, like The Godfather.
Apocalypse Now.
Yep.
And Dracula.
But I will say that, like, most of the onset seems to be a little crazy. Like,
He's definitely also gone a little... He's not what he once was.
Right.
So apparently this movie he's just made, he's been working on this for, like, 20 years.
I want to say that was what I heard.
And he sort of self-financed this?
I know he sold his vineyard and, like, a bunch of other stuff to sort of finance.
God, I hate when I have to sell my vineyard.
I hate selling my vineyard, yeah.
I, you know, I've been cultivating it for years. I have probably 100 employees who work on there, and I don't pay them much.
Right,
but,
no.
They get the job done.
Yeah.
They get it.
But look, Dave, I needed that diamond-encrusted D-Man pop figure, and the only way to get it was to sell my vineyard.
Yep. Sometimes when you got to sell your vineyard, it's just... That's the sacrifices we make as rich people.
Yeah. But Francis Ford Coppola sold his vineyard to make this movie Megalopolis.
Yes.
Which, I think as we were watching it, Dave, you're like, well, that's not the usual thing.
So
you know what I would compare it to, though?
What would you compare it to?
I would compare it to Brazil from Terry Gilliam.
I can totally see that, yeah.
It had the same kind of psychedelic, weird reality, dreamlike qualities. Yeah. There's clearly satirical elements about, like, culture.
Well, there's like a live statue of the Statue of Liberty, like banging her head against the wall or something like
that. Yes. So he first conceived of this project in 1977.
Drugs.
And then actively started developing it in 1983.
Cocaine.
We know what's going on here.
And then he has spent $120 million of his own money on the film.
Cocaine again.
Sadly, vineyard sale.
Vineyard sale. Cocaine and vineyards.
What would you say the story is based on that trailer?
So looking at the trailer, it looks to me like it is about the fall of an American-style empire and maybe a guy who's like a leader in that empire trying to figure out if it's worth trying to save this nation as, like, it falls apart under its own avarice and hubris
and all that stuff. Yeah.
What does it say it's about?
Cocaine.
And cocaine.
An accident destroys the decaying New Rome, a New York City-like metropolis. Yep. Caesar Catalina, an idealist architect with the power to control time, aims to rebuild the city as a sustainable utopia, while his opposition, corrupt Mayor Franklin Cicero, remains committed to a regressive status quo. Torn between them is Franklin's socialite daughter, Julia, who, tired of the influence she inherited, searches for her life's meaning and discovers what she truly believes humanity deserves.
You know, it's funny, Nick, that's not the pitch I would have said, but you're right, you said that, I'm like, yeah, that was all in the trailer.
Yeah, it kind of was.
They show chariot races in like a New York setting.
Right, so what it looks like what he is doing is he's going to compare American decadence to kind of Fall of Rome decadence.
Yeah, makes sense.
And sort of literalize it so that it's like there's like guys named Cicero and Roman, like very specific Roman
but also time
comics.
Manipulation.
But also time manipulation and possibly a living Statue of Liberty, or that was a dream sequence, we don't know.
Yeah, we don't know.
But there was a lot of stuff like
that. But the cast is crazy.
There was stuff that looked like Matrix things where
yeah, visually it's very striking. Yeah. I gotta admit, I'm kind of interested. I mean, it looks like it's probably a train wreck.
Yeah,
like this seems so ambitious and so long gestation. It's got to be a train wreck.
It's pretty rare you get a Brazil.
Yeah,
but it looks like it's the main character is Adam Driver.
Right. Yep.
Is he Cicero or is he Caesar?
Caesar Catalina.
Call me Johnny Cicero.
Mayor Franklin Cicero is Giancarlo Esposito.
Oh,
so you have
those are two really good villains. Really just dove into playing bad guys.
And then just random actors who are in this. Aubrey Plaza apparently plays a fairly notable role.
Yep.
Jason Schwartzman plays a very notable role. Talia Shire, Lawrence Fishburne, Dustin Hoffman.
Lawrence Fishburne feels like he's like the narrator for the trailer. He feels like the Greek chorus guy.
And then there's, weirdly, Shia LaBeouf. He is in this as
sure.
well.
Okay, probably playing himself. He probably just wandered on a set and they just filmed him.
Yeah. Good stuff, Shia.
just don't hurt us.
It looks.
Give me your vineyard.
Give me your vineyard, or the statue gets it.
And then Christopher Coppola had no choice but to give him the vineyard.
He just magic hands his way into the set.
No. So yes, I have to agree. This is more interesting looking than I expected, and that's a bonkers premise. Yeah. I give it like the odds that it comes through, I think, is around 30-40%.
Yeah, that sounds about right. Yeah,
but Coppola has had greatness in his time. Yep. No doubt.
Sustained by apparently cocaine.
Yes,
I'm going to once again recommend, by the way, that everybody should watch on Paramount Plus
the Godfather backstory
thing, which I can never remember. It's not called The Proposal or The Argument, or
I think it is The Proposal.
Is it The Proposal? That's something. I'll look it up. But it is a show about the making of The Godfather. And it is
I guess I should watch it.
It's not really fictionalized. It's probably
maybe a heightened.
The Offer is what it's called.
The Offer.
It's a miniseries about the development and production of The Godfather.
Okay,
it stars Miles Teller as the producer who's trying to sort of shepherd it. In Albert S. Ruddy.
Okay.
He's the guy who sort of shepherded it. Matthew Good plays Robert Evans, famous like super producer and cokehead.
Okay.
He's great in it. Dan Fogler plays Francis Ford Coppola. He's also really, really good. Colin Hanks plays a sort of staid Paramount executive.
Like a drama, or is this like a dark comedy?
It's a drama, but it's got some dark comedy elements.
Okay, all
right. Also, Giovanni Ribisi plays a mobster called Joe Colombo, who was involved in the filming.
Okay.
And Juno Temple plays Betty McCart, who is Albert's assistant. And sort of this very much a powerful woman who's helping him out.
Well, Juno Temple can do no wrong.
Juno Temple's amazing in this.
Hmm.
Jake Cannavale is in it. They bring in somebody who plays one of the guys in The Godfather actually was a mobster. And they brought him in to play one of the mobster parts, and then they couldn't get rid of him. He was a bad actor, and they couldn't get rid of him.
Oh, man.
I recall this.
It's crazy. It is such a good... I've only seen The Godfather once. It's not like one of my favorite movies or anything, but this made me want to watch it again because the story of how it got made is
fascinating.
Knowing
what you know.
Yeah.
I only watched it once on television with all the commercials. It was a long time.
I bet.
Oh, yeah. Nick, did you ever see the version of this? As a kid, the first time I saw any lengthy parts of it, they did a version where they showed, at the time, the two movies, Godfather and Godfather 2, but they did it in chronological order, and they just took all the scenes that had been cut up, and they just ran them in chronological order, which I would not recommend. It's not to the movie's quality.
Yeah.
But that means it starts with Robert De Niro playing young Don Corleone in Sicily.
Yeah.
I'm going to say this. Never seen Godfather Part 2.
I have.
I watched it recently. Like, Nick, I recommend it.
Yeah, you know what's funny, sure. Dave? I didn't like the parts that were in the modern day, but I liked all the past stuff that De Niro's in.
But I think I would say I liked it all, but I would say that the De Niro stuff was the best.
But, Dave, you are anti-assassin. I am anti-mobster and zombie. So will I like this?
So, Nick, you're going to hate my movie Mob Zombies that I'm making.
Oh God, I'm sure mob zombies exist.
Those probably exist.
It is this. It does have the same sort of dispassionate depiction of the mob, where
weirdly though, I've always been curious about reading Mario Puzo's actual novel.
You'll find out in that I think it's not much as much as made of this, if anything, in the movies, but that Sonny, played by
James Caan,
has a super giant dick. I remember hearing that's like a big thing in the book.
Well, James, James Caan is they definitely play him up. He's an interesting character. When they need that mobster gone, like James Caan, like tough guys him out.
Oh wow, it's great.
It's so good. The Offer is so worth watching.
Okay.
By the way, what's my thing? I know I have one. What besides Deadpool?
Fantasy?
Oh, maybe it is elves. Yeah, mine is elves.
Yeah.
Dave,
a guy who plays as much D&D as you do, it's wild that that is one of your...
Dave doesn't like assassins. You don't like monsters and zombies. I don't like elves.
However, our next trailer definitely fantasy.
Has a bunch of elves, and I do like it. There are exceptions.
Right.
Just as there are exceptions to your mob rule.
That's true.
And zombie rule.
That's true.
And Dave has exceptions.
Even I will allow exceptions in. Yeah. There's something coming up where, like, I wanted to see, I just haven't gotten around to it yet, the oh my God.
Did you watch The Killer?
The Killer, but yeah. Who directed that? Fincher.
Fincher, yeah.
Yeah, I need to see Fincher's The Killer, and I liked Mindhunter, but that's a serial killer movie,
that's
really.
But that's like,
and it's even like a cerebral procedural kind of thing.
That's about the people who created the...
Right.
But Dave, how do you feel about Spider-Man Assassination, which comes out as an Epic Collection this week?
I remember liking it at the time.
It's got Silver Sable, Paladin, I believe, is in it.
Yeah, I'm going to allow it.
All right. So anyway, yes, Lord of the Rings, Rings of Power, Season 2 teaser. This is the thing I think has been maligned a bit online. I think all three of us really liked it.
Yeah, I thought it was really good. Yeah. I was digging
that
every
first
episode.
Season. Like, since Lord of the Rings has so many kind of, there's this epic kind of seriousness to it, but it was fun to see something that whose story hadn't been told.
Yeah.
Or whose, honestly, I know that they made a lot of tweaks to continuity and canon and stuff in there.
Right.
But the kind of upside to that is, A, I don't know most of that. I haven't read The Silmarillion, which I know this actually isn't directly based on, but they draw events from that and also from the appendices and stuff like that.
Yep.
But, like, I didn't know what's going to happen with these Harfoot hobbits that are kind of like they're like the nomad hobbits of their day.
Yeah.
They find a dude who's, like, crashed to Earth like these David Bowie men who fell to Earth kind of thing, and they're like, we're like, is this Gandalf? Is this Sauron?
Yep.
Is this Radagast?
Is
we don't know, but he's some kind of powerful being.
They did a good job of making the mystery.
And there were
some
mysteries, like
mysteries.
That.
Yeah, yeah.
There was a big mystery as to, is somebody in this series Sauron?
Yep.
What are the orcs doing with all of this tunneling in that first season? They're doing this tunneling under places. And they had, like, that cool elf dude that they took captive, and they're, like, making the elves cut trees down. That was messed up.
Plus.
And then there was also Galadriel's story. She's kind of, like, she had, like,
kind
lost her
Galadriel.
Brother, and yep. She was very fiery. And
she was, like, bent on revenge.
She's bent on revenge.
Against Sauron.
It was, yeah, kind of her in her days of hubris. And then big things happened at the very end
of it.
Yeah,
Elrond and
The friendship
King,
of Elrond and
the dwarf
lord guy.
It's not Gimli. Is it Gimli's dad? Is he related?
It's one of those dwarves that there's like a dozen different dwarves.
Why can I remember Gimli, son of Gloin, but I can't remember?
Oh, so it's not Gloin.
No, because this is the.
This is their ancestor. Like, this is, like, hundreds and hundreds of years before. Anyway.
Sleepy Dopey. He's one of those dwarves.
He's the, like, prince, essentially, among the dwarves.
Yes.
The son of the king.
Yes.
And had a connection with Elrond that had fallen apart, and then they kind of reforge it in this, but
some
there's
great
difficulties.
Scenes.
And they were great together.
Yeah.
So, I'm like, you know, if you're going to do the deep canon dive and tell me all the ways it's wrong, that is okay. That is probably at least mostly true.
Just don't watch it.
But just don't watch it. I am having fun seeing, like, Lord of the Rings stuff that is kind of new and original.
Yeah.
And so, so now we see season two, and what we know is that, like, the rings have been forged.
The rings have been forged.
They are being, they're out there. There's a sense of both. We have this visual sense of roots crawling across the ground. This creature that looks like it's made up of, like, It looks like veins and roots and stuff like that. But I believe it's all symbolic of Sauron's creeping his way into controlling these people with the One Ring.
I would imagine we'll get some flashback that kind of fills in why he took human form. And,
right.
Because isn't he supposed to be like kind of a Lucifer analog where he
Yeah. There's like a dude above him.
Yeah.
So he's like second in command, super evil guy. Yep. But for our purposes, it's like he's as evil as it gets.
Yes.
Yes.
This looks like it had giant battles, just cool stuff.
Yeah, the action looks amazing.
We saw an eagle in it. We saw some elves squaring off like they were about to kick some.
Yep.
Including our hero elf, that kind of captain of the guard guy whose name's going to escape me here.
I gotta say, I am. I know this is heresy. I find the Lord of the Rings movies a little boring.
Sure,
yeah. I've watched them. I've enjoyed them. I am anti-elf.
You could be wrong.
And I
you
felt
know,
like
you know, the, Nick, when it starts out and Galadriel is like, "The time of change has come upon us." Yeah. I'm like, okay, it's a little boring.
Yeah, Rings of Power boring. Had fantastic action.
It does.
It did.
In every episode.
Remember that bit where they're like. What is it? They're being, like, chased by the orcs.
Yeah.
And they have, like, there's, like, it's, like, 1,000 orcs and, like, 3 people.
Yeah.
And they like, make it out of the forest to the sun, and they're, like, the orcs have to turn back.
Yep.
Like, it was a cool way to both call back things we knew about the orcs from the movies or the books, but, like, they did it in a very original way.
Yeah. And I would like young badass Galadriel to step on me.
Isn't it Doran? the dwarf name is Doran.
Nope.
No?
No.
Durin.
Durin.
Well, that's what it, Dor. I mean,
Durin and Doran are different.
Fine, I mispronounced the U. But
you have dishonored the dwarves, Nick.
Sure.
Right. So, not this Durin, but one of his like sons is the one who accidentally busts out the Balrog, and that's why they call it Durin's Bane.
Dumbass Durin.
Because
that's what they call him.
It did get kicked the shit out of him. He did. I mean, he suffered for his sins.
Yes.
A Balrog beat him up, and so he died.
And took his lunch money.
Took his lunch money and murdered
him. speaking of Lord of the Rings, they are doing a movie, more movie prequels.
Right.
This is called The Hunt for Gollum. It is directed by Andy Serkis.
And starring Andy Serkis.
Andy Serkis.
Now.
Of great Carnage, or Venom 2, Let There Be Carnage.
Yes, unfortunately, the last thing he did was that. I'm torn because I also just recently saw him as an actor in Andor, killing it.
Yeah, he was great.
Sure.
As the sort of the, well, initially the kind of, he was like a, what would you call him? He was in the prison, and he was like a highly placed prisoner who just, he like ran the work gangs and stuff like that. And so he had a high position, but he was basically working for the man and was not willing to do anything that threatened them whatsoever because he thought they might get out, which later they find out was never going to happen. And so we get to see him make this very terrible choice where he's got to start assisting in the rebelling there. That he's the voice that has to happen, and Cassian is the guy who got him to do it, but it had to be him. So, amazing performance by him. Him as Gollum returning, sure. There's a famous sequence that is mentioned in the books where, like, for years, Gollum was on the run. I believe when, Gandalf suspected the One Ring was what he had had.
So.
He and Aragorn and were trying to track him down, and eventually Sauron gets him.
Yeah.
So let me ask you this.
Yep.
Is there any point to doing a prequel about Gollum?
No.
Like, they did that Gollum video game, which apparently was very terrible.
Right. I believe, by the way, it was set in this era. It's like
what are they doing? This, we know what's going to happen.
But you can say the same of Rings of Power.
I guess, but I don't know. I can't imagine them doing an interesting version.
Well, the big problem, I think, for me is that Gollum's character arc is kind of like... Well, we may see him before he had, you know, fully gotten, like, that evil Gollum out of him, right? We may see...
Fully Gollumed out.
That, you know, Sauron's tormenting him and torturing him and stuff like that was what kind of pushed him there. And other than that, maybe he had a shot. But I don't know. Seeing him elude Aragorn and stuff like that sounds kind of like fun, but
I guess I.
But are you gonna get Viggo to come back, or are you gonna?
You get a CGI version.
You get CGI, like Dire Straits videos.
No, actually, a bad AI version with like 10 fingers on each hand.
You know those Korean trial animations?
Yes, it'll be just like that.
Yeah.
But I mean, without Ian McKellen or and Viggo coming back and sort of like
theoretically, I think it could work in the same way Rings of Power does.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
Did they say this is going to be one movie or did I hear
it's one
two?
Movie? There's another movie that's like an animated thing. That
okay, they've been talking about that
but
forever.
That so, one's about the Rohirrim.
Here's the good. Thing: even if they make this, Zaslav's probably going to can it for the tax write-off. So who cares?
It's possible. Now let me throw out one thing that might make you interested in this. This All is right. something that's mentioned in the book, but doesn't tend to get brought up too much.
Cyberpunk Gollum.
It is just possible that Gollum ate some babies.
Oh,
while he was traveling around.
Why didn't you lead with that?
So because like Gandalf is like
he did kill his best friend. Babies are not too far.
Right. The deal is that I think they Aragorn talks about like when he was tracking him and he keeps on losing him because Gollum's just so sneaky that. That there was like some village or whatever he came to where they had shuttered their windows because babies had gone missing in the night.
Sure.
And they're like, oh, Gollum munched them. now, I have this feeling that they're going to, if they did that, that what the movie version would reveal was there was another fell creature loose in there and Gollum actually saved the babies and it got blamed on him and then he became sad Gollum and then he became mad Gollum. I'm going to go ahead and put this theory out that that's what they do. That they will make him sympathetic, you know, to
when
do
does
that.
He become Glad Gollum?
Right when he gets the ring at the end and falls into the lava. Oh. That's Glad Gollum.
Oh, yeah.
He's, right. he's okay. around yeah. for about 2 seconds.
He got his ring back. He was happy. And then
lava.
And then lava.
Oh, sick! As Gollum once said. Anyway, I have the most interest, I think, in this era, and I think it's kind of ill-conceived, too. I also think all the backlash against Rings of Power is... means that it's not a great idea. I actually suspect this, even though they've announced it and everything, may still get shit canned.
Now let me Zaslav.
He said that it will explore storylines yet to be told.
Yeah, but Zaslav, we know that what Zaslav is best at is killing things and taking their money. So let me pitch you something I feel like could really reinvigorate the franchise. Lord of the Rings 2099.
By the way, I have an alternate title based on what I was telling you. Yeah. Gollum, Baby Eater.
Oh. How about this, Dave? Gollum. You know, remember the Thunderbolts they reveal as like the asterisk on it?
Yeah.
What if it's Gollum, Baby Eater, asterisk, and the actual title is Gollum, Not a Baby Eater?
if... From what Zaslav said, maybe what's going to happen is, you know, because there's a bunch of different rangers. Here's what I bet they have, is key appearances... by Aragorn. I bet played by a different actor.
Yeah.
They won't just enyoungen him.
Viggo Mortensen's not doing anything.
But they would have other lead characters or some other rangers that are working with him that are like maybe training under him. They'll go ahead and give them their own arcs and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And they'll be tracking down Gollum for him. We'll get some other kind of Middle Earth stuff. They'll figure out what else was happening in this era that would be interesting. I think it could potentially be done.
Maybe.
But it seems ill-conceived.
I have more interest in Rings of Power than I ever thought, so...
So, yeah, there's at least a possibility for it.
Turns out when you spend $1 billion on a television show, it's worth watching.
They have to make it that way.
All right, we got some interesting Fantastic Four casting news. This movie is coming out next year, right? So they've got to be ought to be filming it, and this is just stuff we're finding out. But the people they cast, Ralph Ineson, British actor...
You would know him as the father in The Witch. He was also played the Green Knight in The Green Knight.
Oh, this guy has presence then.
He's voicing super big Galactus. Presence.
Right. So I guess that means Galactus is going to be in this.
Yeah.
All right. Well,
we were right. You were wrong.
I didn't want it, but...
why would you not want Galactus in the Fantastic Four movie?
I just don't think you start with it. I think there's so many unexplored avenues and other FF villains and stuff, which they could still work in some. But I think Galactus is something you do in movie 2 or 3.
I think they will probably.
But I understand why they're doing it because they're scared of Marvel's downfall and they need to hit the big hits.
Yeah.
Now, I hope they do it right.
They also cast Paul Walter Hauser, who you would know from Cobra Kai, various other things. Here's a weird one, Mole Man.
I think so.
Yeah.
It makes the most.
Paul Walter
Hauser
could totally play Mole.
Does he look like a mole?
He's kind of a weird looking dude.
Okay. Yeah.
He could definitely play Mole Man. He tends to play like neckbeard types. Like,
yeah, okay.
That would be kind of fun.
And I think he'd be great for it. And it would maybe give some life to a character that I really don't care about.
Yeah.
You know, Mole Man's fine.
You know what's cool if you do the Mole Man?
Moloids.
He has moloids, but he also has like monsters like kaiju.
Yeah.
And then that's something that, you know, we kind of haven't seen in the movies really, like that level.
Yeah.
So seeing the FF cut with their powers really cutting loose. Sue can do that thing where she like makes the force field under it and like lifts some kaiju up like 1,000 feet and drops it. Ben can fight him.
The very first issue of Fantastic Four has them fighting a kaiju-sized mole man monster.
Yep.
And so if they reference that, that'll make everybody happy. Yep. They can even just open with that.
Yeah.
Yep. And then they're like, hey, is that Galactus attacking at some point?
Yes. That's how it'll be.
Woo, we beat the mole man and his moloids. What's that?
But there's going to be a lot in this movie, though.
The other cast is John Malkovich.
Yep.
Which, Doom, maybe? I don't think so, though.
No.
I don't know. Nathaniel Richards? I mean, I don't know what you cast John Malkovich for. I don't know. I mean, I'm sure it'll be great. I just don't know what role he'll be playing.
I told you, Red Ghost.
Red Ghost would be amazing.
he fits visually.
He could totally play Red Ghost.
I could see him overdubbing the... He could be, like, voice of Doom, and, like they could have, like, a younger actor playing person becoming Doom, but him still overdubbing voice.
I don't think they'll do that, though.
Malkovich is a gat.
But, like, so we're, right now we're thinking... Mole Man, Galactus, and
Silver Surfer. Well, that makes sense. You got Galactus. But I don't think Malkovich is going to be a big player in this, and I don't think he's going to be Doom. I think it's going to be something else, like I say, Nathaniel Richards,
is he
or
voice like Annihilus?
Something. I mean, they can't put Annihilus in this, too. I mean, I guess they could, but they'd be overstuffed. And whatever else you can say about Marvel, they generally have not overstuffed their movies.
He's going to voice a single moloid.
Is he going to voice, like...
I will only do this film if I can voice a moloid.
Is he going to voice, like, Terax? Or, like, one of the other heroines?
I don't know.
He has more of an aristocratic vibe. Terax is like a warlord.
I also thought possibly the wizard.
That I could see.
Because the wizard is not a guy you need to give a whole movie to.
He's pretty old.
He's
like...
It would make almost more sense for me to be voicing a CG character of some sort.
Yeah, maybe
like,
how old
is John Malkovich?
Maybe he's Herbie.
I'm going to guess he's like 75?
He's at least 70.
Yeah. He's voicing Herbie. That's my pitch.
I mean, that's possible.
Who trapped me in this metal monstrosity?
So 70 years old.
Okay.
Yeah. I don't know, but it's good cast. I'm very excited for this movie. I know a lot of people are wary of it because they're like, Fantastic Four has never had a good movie. I'm like, well, they've never had people who give a shit about it doing it, so...
Yeah, that's I think, a weak
basically had
complaint.
A company that was just making shit to keep them... from getting...
This is the people... This is Marvel. They, like, they know if they get this right, they can reinvigorate the entire franchise.
Yeah, doing the they haven't had a good movie is kind of like saying, oh, there weren't really, other than, like, Superman and Batman, there weren't any good superhero movies into the 2000s. Like, people weren't... In the same way they didn't, there were no good video game shows until there were.
Yeah.
All it takes is the person figuring it out.
Yeah.
And it's not even actually that hard. You just actually... Really, talented writers is probably the most important thing.
Well, I also think... I think a lot of people, the at-large people, are just, like, they're trying to superhero movies, and so they want to write everything off. They're like, this stuff's all crap. And I'm like, you know... Fantastic Four is a good concept. There's no reason it can't be a good movie, except that the people who are making the movies didn't understand it.
Right.
The people making this movie understand the Fantastic Four.
I think you have to tease Doom, though, in some way.
Maybe. I don't think you have to.
Or mention Latveria, or
they
something.
They may mention it or something, yeah.
But this seems like a really stacked movie.
Yeah.
It's got a lot going on.
I'm very happy about this. I'm looking forward to it more than anything other Marvel from next year, I think. And even with Cap 4 coming, I think this is the one I'm looking forward to the most.
It's a great cast.
I mean, like FF and X-Men are the ones, the big expansion of the MCU, and I'm really looking forward to seeing what they do.
How far are we away from them announcing X-Men characters?
I don't know.
Because I feel like it's got to be soon. If Marvel is, like, tipping in the wrong direction, the best way of, like, getting some
the best
like,
correction
love
would be to launch X-Men.
Is like, okay, here, who are we casting as the X-Men?
Yeah.
And then just... build up that kind
of... I think there's going to be some notable reveal in Deadpool.
Yeah.
And they probably will have... when is that happening? When is Deadpool?
July?
July.
So we're real close to that. I think there's going to be a big reveal around then. They'll use that to get people hyped for it, and then they'll be like, here's the first group shot, or here's
whatever.
You
know, I don't know if there's any truth to this, but you all have seen the rumors about Storm, right?
No, I don't know.
Rumors that
this.
Janelle Monáe is circling Storm.
Yeah. Oh, interesting. That's kind of fun.
Janelle Monáe would be great.
Yeah.
I would love Janelle Monáe as Storm. Yeah. But anyway, we got renewal on Lioness, the Taylor Sheridan show that you and I both liked. It was a CIA.
That I honestly thought was just going to be the done in one season.
Do we know if everybody's coming back?
No, I don't think we know.
I would love to see Zoe Saldana come back. But she was great. But
behind the scenes people were good enough. Like, you could cast some completely new people right. and do a new show. So,
which is fine as well.
I really like Lannis. And I hope the season two is good. I was not expecting a season two on that.
I agree.
Nicolas Cage is going to play Spider-Man Noir in live action for MGM / Amazon Prime in a show called Noir. And that is what gives me pause. Just call it Spider-Man Noir. If you can't call it Spider-Man Noir, what is wrong with your show?
Right.
You know, I weirdly, it's one of those things that makes it seem most like they're shitty Sony movies.
Yeah.
You know, Craven, Madame Web, et cetera, et cetera. Yeah. But I do get, like, Noir is a cool name. This character actually already has his cachet built up because of the animated movies.
Yep.
And I think it may have more punch than Spider-Man Noir. It's a little... That's kind of a mouthful.
Yeah.
Noir isn't. I think it could be that simple.
Now, here's the other thing.
But I don't think, like...
Do we really want Nicolas Cage in live-action playing Spider-Man Noir?
Well, they've already said something that seemed a little unusual to me, which he will be playing, like, his own age and not going to CG him or something.
Yeah.
And he's supposed to be an aging detective at this point, which, I guess, if you want to not CG Nick Cage, that's what you got to do. That seems a little odd to me.
Mm-hmm.
There's an odd choice. I do think a live-action Spider-Man Noir makes some sense. I think people would be into that.
Yeah.
But I don't quite get what they want to get out of it.
I mean, either.
You can reference actual noir stuff. It'd be interesting to try and take those old tropes, which have, like a lot of misogyny, you know, the femme fatale thing was, like, rooted in a lot of, like, I mean, it's like, just this notion that women were kind of, like, all manipulators and stuff like that. And I'm like... It would be interesting to try and find new ways to use some of those same tropes, and there's a whole lot of them associated with it. There's also this sort of hopelessness. You feel trapped in noir movies, and I'm like, okay, like, find new ways of doing that. Gen Z talks about feeling that way all the time.
Yeah.
So can you find something that will reflect them in this retro setting? So I think it could be a cool idea. It's weird to me that they're going to run with the older thing, but. You know, that fits noir concepts, too.
Yeah, it does. One last bit of Prime news. Phoebe Waller-Bridge is developing Tomb Raider. They did well with Fallout.
Yeah, very well.
So I think a Tomb Raider show could work. I think I really like Phoebe Waller-Bridge, but she's done a couple things I wasn't crazy about. I liked Indiana Jones, the latest Indiana Jones. When I went back to rewatch it, I didn't like it as much.
Yeah.
And I same with her show that was on that was the Killing Eve was really good. And then she left and it turned into something terrible.
Yeah.
So I don't know how her follow through is. It's one of these things like Brian Fuller who was on like you know six different projects
right
and then left all of them. But if she sticks around, I think I'd be interested in this.
You know what's weird is I think probably few people liked the original Tomb Raider games, the first three, say, in the 90s, as much as I did. It was just like such a, I love Indiana Jones, and it was the first kind of third-person game where I really felt like the environments were sort of sprawling, and there were cool traps and cool puzzles to solve and all this stuff, and I really loved it. The Angelina Jolie movies did not live up, but weirdly... Although I very much like the reinvention that they did of the games as kind of like an edgier survival series in more recent times. Awesome bow fighting and stuff like that in it, bow and arrow stuff. I think the character is most fun to me when she is kind of the blithe, Bond-esque thing that Angelina Jolie was.
Yeah.
And like the more serious one from the recent video games, as good as they are, and I think they're really good, I kind of don't care about that character.
Yeah.
I care about her more, honestly, when she's kind of shallow and she's the aloof badass.
Well, if Phoebe Waller-Bridge is writing her, I mean, she can write that shallow kind of British.
Yeah, for sure she can.
I mean, Fleabag was definitely...
But she wasn't shallow in it, right? Wasn't there depth to the characters?
I don't know. Like, I didn't watch... I watched a few episodes and I wasn't enamored with that show.
I wonder what direction they're going to choose for it. But
I don't know.
I have enough interest built up in the character. I'll be kind of watching it.
But I think a series is better for it than a movie. Because the movies that they've done, like the Alicia Vikander one...
They
is
always...
Just,
yeah.
I never even got around to it.
It's not worth it.
And a movie, you know, you're going to want to do like only some big set pieces. There will be three big set pieces that must occur. In a show, you can kind of do more fun, small stuff.
Yeah, agreed.
Last thing, comic stuff. We're just going to talk a little bit about the latest teasers for the X-Men relaunch.
Yes.
Which is coming up here soon. I think, does that officially start in June?
I believe it's June.
And for Free Comic Book Day, they previewed it with a cool little Jubilee story
Yeah, it was Uncanny X-Men Gail Simone's.
Yeah, and I liked its vibe quite a bit.
I was realizing that our staffer Serena is super excited about it. That is her X-Men team.
Yeah.
And it's close to mine.
The team that Jubilee is on?
It's got Rogue, yeah. It's Rogue, Gambit,
Cyclops?
No, Nightcrawler, and Jubilee. And I think a player's to be named later. I think there's some New Mutants in there, too.
Okay.
But that's the main team. They're based out of a mansion in New Orleans, and they're going to do, like, the outlaw hero thing, which is what I want of X-Men.
And I like the mansion in New Orleans sounds cool.
What I'm missing is Colossus and Storm.
Right.
If you had Colossus and Storm, that would be my... And Kitty Pryde, that would be my team. Now, Jubilee's subbing in for Kitty Pryde. Storm is off doing another thing, which we'll talk about in a minute. I don't know where Colossus is. And if they're not using Colossus... They fucking up.
Yeah, Colossus is a great character.
There was a teaser that came out yesterday that had the logos for Storm, Dazzler, and Avengers.
Yep.
Storm, Dazzler are getting ongoing series. Avengers said Earth's Mightiest Mutant joins Earth's Mightiest Heroes. We were speculating yesterday that it would be Colossus because, you know, he's mighty.
He is.
And he's not in any other books. Mm-hmm. They announced today it is not Colossus. It is, in fact, Storm, who has a claim to being Earth's Mightiest Mutant. She's an Omega-level mutant, as we know from X-Men 97.
Right, yeah. Right, they leaned into it.
I like the idea of her joining the Avengers, actually. I think she could lead the Avengers.
Yeah.
What I'm not crazy about is it's her joining Jeb McKay's, like, Icons team.
Right.
And I want it to be a little quirkier. I want, like, Hercules or somebody to stick around.
Yeah.
Right.
But...
The characters that they have in the Blood Hunt team...
Yes, it's a great team.
...is a better team.
So much fun. Yeah. Yeah, I think we're unusual in that we like the Avengers to be like B and C listers. Like, the A-listers have their own books. You don't need them in the Avengers necessarily.
Now, having a few of them in there.
Sure, one or two.
Having, say, Thor and Cap and Wanda.
Yeah.
But then several other weirdos.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's where I'm on that. But I do like, as a general thing, Storm joining the Avengers.
Yeah, I think that's a good idea.
Dave, you and I were talking off mic a little bit about, like, we kind of want X-Men to be X-Men, Avengers to be Avengers.
Right.
Mutants separate but equal. I understand.
Yes, it's weird, but it's like in the same way that a lot of times Batman books you want to be mainly Batman. You don't want the Justice League coming in and crowding things out all the time just because they're his friends and saying, hey, do you want us to just catch the Joker for you?
Yeah.
Flash is like, I can find him in like 5 minutes.
Yeah.
You don't want that. And the X-Men are kind of coolest as outlaws, and the Avengers are honestly coolest as slightly establishment heroes.
But then you get stories where Captain America, they're like, what did you ever do with the mutant people, Captain America?
And he's like,
I don't know what you're talking about. I'm like, I hate that, so.
Yeah.
You got a Paul Jenkins
Let's see. Notable, I know that, like, technically probably everybody has joined the Avengers at some point, but the Beast was famously an Avenger for years.
Yep.
Yep.
Scarlet Witch was one of the second team Avengers.
That's right, and I think of her at this point more as an Avenger than an X-Man.
Me too. Has she been an X-Man?
She was a villain in X-Men, but okay. I guess she's never been an X-Man.
She was on Brotherhood of the Evil Mutants, but I don't think she was ever
actually
on...
been in the X-Men.
You're right. Yeah. She's just a bad guy.
Quicksilver has been both.
Been X-Men and bad guy and X-Factor.
I think I can roll with the Storm thing.
What's interesting to me is that...
It'd be weird, by the way, to have her not the leader.
What's weird, though, is she's going to be in Avengers, but also her own standalone book.
That's a little bit weird. I guess it just depends on what the vibe of her standalone book is.
She's had good books. Remember, Greg Pak wrote that miniseries we all loved.
It's quite good.
It's true.
Yeah. So she's had good standalone books.
I mean, Wolverine's been on the Avengers and had a solo book forever, so...
That's
true. I mean,
Wolverine's a special case, though, Nick. Wolverine can be in, like, 8 books. It's like one of his powers.
I mean, he is still gonna be in 8 books.
That's true. You know what's weird is, I do think Storm makes sense as the leader of the Avengers, but probably not coming in this way, because also they've got Captain Marvel...
Right.
And Black
Panther.
She's
the current leader, right?
Yeah. Captain Marvel, Black Panther, and someone else in that team. Like Vision can arguably lead that team. Everybody in that team.
Iron Man.
You know what? Iron Man.
That's
actually
the problem with the team.
Yes, that's the problem. They're all leader types.
Too many chiefs, not enough Indians.
Yeah. Yes,
I'm sure that is a very dated phrase. Very dated phrase, yes. but it gets the idea across here.
The only, like, team characters in that book are Wanda and Vision.
Yeah. And like I say, Vision was leader at one point. So.
Yeah, West Coast.
No, he was led the regular Avengers.
Did he lead the regular Avengers?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay, I wouldn't have...
Yeah, for a while, that's when he created the West Coast Avengers. Of course, he was under control of a computer at that point.
Is that Isaac?
Isaac,
computer?
The space computer from Titan.
Yep. It's a thing.
Yeah. Anyway, ask him about American history. I don't know shit, but he asked me about Avengers history.
Around that time, Isaac controlled Vision and made him create the West Coast Avengers.
You know, I was thinking about this the other day. Slight tangent. There have been less than 50 U.S. presidents. There have been hundreds of issues of Avengers. I could not name you all 50 issues of 50 presidents. I can probably name you 100 people who've been in the Avengers.
Yes.
And I feel like I may have misspent my time.
Listen, maybe if the presidents raised their game.
Yeah, maybe if the presidents fired optic blasts.
If I knew how much
Lincoln could lift press.
Lincoln could lift press, it would help.
I mean, what do you really need to know, Chester A. Arthur?
I need to know if Chester A. Arthur had a healing factor. I know that I know that William Henry Harrison didn't. That's a presidential joke for you.
Yes. Anyway. What other books do we have, by the way?
So Dazzler is the other notable one.
Right?
Dazzler has not had a solo series since the 80s.
If Tay-Tay is not playing her in the Deadpool movie somehow, I'll be shocked.
What is going on? Yeah.
Because we've seen reprints of her first issue, like a facsimile reprint.
Yep.
I think the omnibus?
An omnibus treatment.
Omnibus treatment and like an ongoing solo book. It'd be weird if she's not.
I'm weirdly more excited about this ongoing than I am many of the other X-Men.
Same. I actually really want to know what the pitch is.
Because there's a lot of untapped potential in Dazzler. And when we were going back and reading some X-Men recently, like Dazzler has some really good issues, especially basically I think in the post-200 era.
Yeah.
Early on when she's the disco thing, that has worked well I think in her solo series and stuff. But she was best as the kind of 80s pop star in X-Men.
Well, yeah, as I was reading the sort of Fall of Mutants era where she's basically like, what am I doing here? She's like, I did not want to be a superhero. I want to be a pop star.
Yeah.
And she had to sort of decide between being a superhero and being a musician. Yeah. And there's some really cool stuff in that.
It is.
And Juggernaut being a big Dazzler fan was great.
That was really cool.
She's got a fun power set where she can be kind of like, on one level, when she's not charged up, she's a kind of B-list power.
Low-level blaster.
If you want to see something cool, Google what issue where she gets buried alive.
Yep. Oh, yeah, it's X-Men 218.
Something like that. It is one of the coolest sequences.
It's really good.
Yeah. Is that on Muir Island?
Yes.
Juggernaut thinks he's killed her. He's really sad.
Remorseful about it.
Because he's like, it'd be like finding out he's a Swifty.
He was just trying to scare her.
He's just trying to scare her. He thinks he killed her. He buries her. She wakes up. She can't get out.
Yeah.
It's a very cool sequence.
Yeah.
Also, I liked how they got to, honestly, Silvestri and some of the other artists and then.
Yeah.
Basically, she would kind of almost do finger guns.
Yes.
And do blasts with it. And they did it, they drew it really well.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Now, by the way, as a kid, I had a number of issues of Dazzler because that was just one of the comics that was coming out when I was a kid. It was just starting to hit.
Yeah.
And so I got a little bit of her ups and downs in showbiz and stuff like that. And some of those were pretty hokey.
Yeah.
But it was an interesting approach. And like the music industry is so different today that I feel like going ahead and leaning a little bit into that and having some music industry stuff in there, you know, did she make any streaming profits? Still do music videos?
Yeah.
What choices has she made? Is she still pursuing that music career? I think she should be, but I'm interested to see what they do.
Yeah. I agree. All right, let's take a break, and then we're going to come back and talk about X-Men 97 and also vampires. All right, so we are, as has become our tradition, for one more week after this.
Yep.
Talking about X-Men 97. This is your spoiler warning. We're going to talk about the most recent episode.
Tolerance's Extinction.
Technically, when you're listening to it, there might be one more.
Yeah,
right. We're talking about Tolerance's Extinction Part 2.
Yep.
Part 3 will have aired by the time you listen to this, unless you listen to it on Tuesday night, in which case hasn't aired yet. I don't know how time works. I can't manipulate time like Cicero Ramirez.
Romeo Cicero.
Whatever.
And even if we got it right, Bishop might come back and Cable might come back and change that
stuff. That's true. You might throw a time grenade at us.
So when last we saw, there was big problems with the human hybrid sentinels.
Magneto blacked out the entire world.
Sent out an EMP that knocked out. Here we get to see the carnage of that cost.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, they straight up have people saying there are no hospitals.
There are thousands dead.
It's rough. Magneto did worse than ever than sinking a submarine.
Probably not going to be able to come back from this one as a hero.
Yeah, probably not. Although, who knows?
Which I will say was a little bit of a disappointment because I kind of wanted Tim to have, like, what would maybe be the equivalent of a season or two as a good dude.
Me too. I mean, they shortened everything. Everything was kind of, like, compressed. Because, right. Magneto being, like, the head of the Institute, that lasted for, what, 100 issues? Like, it was a ways. Maybe not that long. It was like 50, though. It was a ways in before they did the Fatal Attraction story that this is heavily based on.
But I will say, that is kind of the modus operandi of the X-Men animated series. Everything was kind of condensed and quick-moving and very fast. Yep. And this one was definitely fast and basically saw the X-Men having to split into two teams and go after two different objectives, one being Bastion and then the second team going after Magneto.
Magneto, yes. So trying to get him to turn on the power.
I love all the jokes of why you put Wolverine on.
You've seen these, right, Dave? The jokes about, they're talking about, like, his Cyclops, given that he has a metal skeleton, shouldn't Wolverine maybe go after Bastion? And then you see him picture him kissing Jamie, like, no. Gold team.
I remember because I posted it in the thread that you saw it in.
Oh. Well, I've seen it multiple times. Bunch. Yes. Yeah. It's been making the rounds.
It's great.
Yeah, no, it's good stuff. I'm trying to think, what were the circumstances in which Jean kissed Wolverine?
She was struggling with the whole, when was I Madeline, when was I Jean? Like, when they got to
Who am I,
yeah.
And I think he was kind of doing the gruff, like, just so you know, I always loved you, Jeannie, no matter who you are.
He was trying not to, like, he wasn't actually moving the moves on her for once.
Right, and then that's what worked. She kisses him,
and he pushes back and say, Jean Grey and Scott Summers, that's the couple,
Oh, yeah, that's right.
I thought it was a good moment for Wolverine.
What a morose baby, man.
Yeah.
He had your shot.
Yeah, well, he had a shot, and then you know what happens if you don't kiss your true love. Someone rips your adamantium out of your body. Let that be a lesson to you.
We'll
kids.
Come back around to that one.
Just let Wolverine and Morph be a couple. That's fine.
Yeah,
because the X-Mansion was kind of in ruins, the X-Men got to get retro and put on old costumes.
Yeah.
AKA, for the most part, their 80s costumes.
It was so good.
Which, really good looks for a lot of them. Storm had already gone back into goddess mode, which drew back on her 70s costume.
Yep.
Forge
looks
out,
great.
Forge decked out his X-Men uniform. Yeah, the X-Factor uniform.
Love that little bit about his protective bionic leg or whatever they didn't get.
He's like, that old thing.
He's like, oh, no, I'm all ready for an imp. Yeah.
Yeah, not a problem.
Cool. Rogue in her green.
Rogue in her green, yeah.
With Gambit's jacket. Gambit's jacket was very cool.
Yep. Yeah, no, I loved all the classic costumes in this one.
Yeah, seeing Scott and Jean in, like, the actual, like, Phoenix Saga outfits.
It's very cool. I mean, one of my issues with the X-Men anime, the original, was it was so steeped in the 90s X-Men, which is not my favorite X-Men era. This is definitely drawing a little bit more on the 80s as well. But I think the episode itself, I felt, was a little rushed.
Yeah, and they had a lot to do.
They had this whole thing of, like Dave talked about this off mic. It's like, we have 12 hours to fix things. No one was like, why? No one explained to us why there was this 12-hour
delay. I think there's something on the cutting room floor.
Yeah, and I do believe there is, like, I think a token line or something in there, but it's not real clear at all.
No.
And then they just suddenly start referring to it constantly, like, we've only got 12 hours left. And I was like, okay, I believe you.
But why?
But like, it'd be cooler if I knew what was going on.
Yeah. And the line that you're talking about was Storm saying that, like, the Earth only had so long before the EMP that Magneto disrupted basically would never come back on.
Right.
Or something.
Something
to that
like that, I think.
Yeah.
Very comic booky, but I was fine with it.
They're riffing on Fatal Attractions in the comic. I kind of hate the Fatal Attraction story in the comics. It was Lobdell and Nicias. It was past the Claremont era. I think it may have been when I stopped reading X-Men.
Yeah.
And so I don't love that they're referencing it, but I know it was a big touchstone for a lot of people. And so instead of having Colossus turncoat...
It's Rogue.
It was Rogue. Which is in the comics, doesn't he turn because Ilyana got killed or something?
I don't remember the circumstances.
There was something, and I never bought it.
But here, Rogue makes sense.
Rogue makes sense. Yeah.
100%.
Right. Actually, so does Roberto.
She has just lost. She's just lost Gambit.
She kind of blames Xavier because he didn't come back in time.
Right.
Hates the human race at this point because of Gyrick, basically.
Yeah.
And
the thing is, I totally buy it. I'm like, yeah, you know what? That's a good thing for Rogue to do.
Yeah.
Yep. And then also Magneto might be right.
And Roberto is in a place where basically he's been shunned by everybody, other than
his mom is terrible.
His mom was like, "I'll support you, just never tell your secret."
Yeah.
So she was like, almost worse than if she had just been like, "You're an abomination."
It was Get Out style mutant appreciation.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And real quick aside, we also have Xavier back, which This is the thing that's confused me most as a plot point, because it felt like they were really wanting to get the team kind of out on their own.
Yeah.
Cyclops having to make these calls. Can he work with Magneto or not? You know, if Magneto's gone, can he run it on his own? And all that. And then suddenly Xavier comes in, and it's like, you know, historically in like that kind of hero's journey thing, the hero must leave home. Right?
Yeah.
This felt like the hero leaving home. But then when Xavier shows up, I felt like, oh, it's like the hero went back to stay with mom and dad for a few months.
I almost wonder, you know, we don't know why Bonomeo left.
Yeah.
I have to wonder if part of it was creative differences, because this feels like some executive was like, well, it's got to be Magneto versus Xavier, right? Like,
that's the plot.
I almost
X-Men.
Wonder if someone was like pushing on that, because
maybe
it doesn't feel of a piece with the rest of the show. It feels like Xavier doesn't belong.
I don't know. I think it's also, for me, it was a good wedge to give to Cyclops, basically having kind of butting heads with Xavier.
Right.
To the
point. They do good stuff with it, but I'm with David. It feels like a weird call.
Yeah.
Well, I see if as far as ways it could go, like, Xavier offered Cyclops his hand, and Cyclops didn't take it.
Right.
This could be, you know, like, that was the way that they wanted to depict Cyclops going off into that sort of more radicalized place he's been at times. It could be, you know, I theorize that the reason they showed so much stuff with Lilandra and had him struggling so much to come back was so that we were focused on that story and we didn't think about, oh, I wonder if Cassandra Nova possessed him or something like that.
I think there's another reason Xavier is back.
What's that?
Which is Onslaught.
Well,
Onslaught would be a weird thing to do, though.
But that came out of Fatal Attractions.
No, it didn't.
Xavier mind-wiped Magneto, and that's what caused it.
Is that what caused it? Okay. I was telling Dave, Dave was thinking that Onslaught led into Age of Apocalypse.
Yeah, I blurred
the Age of Apocalypse is when they travel back in time. David Haller, Legion, travel back and accidentally killed Xavier.
I do think X-Men 97 in, like, Season 3 or something like that would be a fun place to explore something like
They haven't done Age of Apocalypse, have they?
No.
That would be a fun thing to do in animation.
Yeah. I think it would be great.
But when Xavier, how is it that he ended up... He had Magneto's helmet on. Was Magneto doing that and, trying to crush it onto
his
head?
No, Magneto was preventing his psychic powers from working.
Yeah.
But with the helmet
thing? Because it blocks. Okay. Because it blocks.
Right. But that fusion visually of Xavier and Magneto made me really think about Onslaught.
Yep. Yeah. Well, and Onslaught did get birthed out of Fatal Attraction.
Okay, I didn't know that. I'd forgotten that.
So that is definitely a thing. Whether or not they'll do that, I don't know.
Right.
Onslaught
they
is
do it
a weird
They can do it in a quite
thing.
Different way.
Yeah.
Like, it could be, instead of the way it happened, the adversary Aimless from,
But we
Storm
haven't
stuff.
Seen since he showed up.
Well, they did thwart him.
Did they?
What?
Storm thwarted
The adversary showed up in like her life death thing.
Right.
But really, we haven't seen much of him beyond that.
No.
But
no,
didn't he get shut down, kind of?
Yeah, Storm kind of shut her down.
I guess in the comics, Follow Me was such an adversary thing.
Yeah. Right. But it may be the kind of thing where they're like, well, the way we're going to have it is that you have that first skirmish with him and Storm beats him and thinks it's done, but instead he's actually going to somehow cultivate Onslaught.
Yeah.
I just don't know if they're going to do Onslaught that quickly, because he seems like a weird thing, especially when now you have a place where mutants are so much going to be persecuted.
Yeah.
They just killed thousands. A mutant killed thousands of people.
Yeah.
There's, I mean, it's... You killed thousands of us. We'll kill thousands of you.
I still think the thing that makes the most sense is Krakoa.
I think so, too.
But I don't know what they're going to do. Here's the thing. I don't know what they're going to do. It's one of the most exciting things about X-Men 97.
Right.
I'm nervous because I don't know how you do all this satisfyingly in one episode. I mean, they're going to have to lead a season two, obviously.
The tricky thing about Krakoa, by the way, is that it began at a time of, I believe, relative peace between mutants and humans, because the whole idea is that the mutants have a sovereign nation and they initiate trade with other nations. Right now, I don't think the world would trade with them.
But they were trading at the point of a gun. They had things that people wanted.
I guess so. I guess so. That would give it, I guess, a kind of heightened intensity.
Yeah.
And yes, Randy, your point is taken, that it's like, it's pretty exciting to not know what's coming next, even though they're drawing on stories we know.
Yeah.
They're definitely, their placement of things and the way that they will extrapolate from them is never really predictable.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which did lead to the big Magneto ripping
Wolverine's adamantium out. I didn't like that story in the comics, but it's very visceral. It's very effective.
Well, and I saw a lot of people saying that this is the first time Wolverine's claws has ever pierced anything on the show.
Yeah.
And I was like, Okay, you make a point there.
Yeah.
And it was a bloody... he literally impales Magneto from behind.
Magneto wasn't so oddly hard to kill for a person who does not actually notably have a healing factor.
Right.
But he seems
he's just that pissed off.
Wolverine stabs old elderly Auschwitz survivor.
It's not playing well.
It doesn't play well, yeah.
You know what? Here's the deal: is Magneto has boss level powers.
He does.
Yeah,
you can stab him, and he will keep coming.
Yeah, his health bar only went down by like 70%.
I mean, if you made like some saying that he could slow down the blood in his body because of the metal in it,
exactly.
Just, like, there's a ton of different ways.
Yeah,
this also had kind of a Whedon-esque vibe to it for me because they put everybody in danger.
Yeah,
because Jean, we don't know what happened to Jean, but basically,
she was having a big showdown with
Cable. Who has been...
Well,
like,
wait.
Cable turns out to be Mr. Sinister.
Well, it was Mr. Sinister, and then Cable, mind-controlled by Sinister, was attacking him.
Right,
probably due to the techno-organic virus somehow, or...
Well, he has telepathy. He's got Madeline's powers in a lot of ways.
Oh, right,
And, yeah, she did the whole mind link with Scott, and then something big happened that we don't see.
Right.
Which then Scott shot Xavier's wheelchair to stop him from...
Wolverine stabbed an elderly
Holocaust
survivor, and Scott shot an old man's wheelchair. Not looking great here, X-Men. Not looking great.
To me, my X-Men. Oh!
I'm just wondering, are they going to do anything crazy? Like, take Wolverine off the board?
I don't know.
I think we might
have more of a focus on Wolverine in season 2.
I agree.
Right. So I think one of the most interesting things they did do was more or less have him as just purely a supporting character in this season.
But I will say, if you take a couple people off the board, if you take Jean, if you take Wolverine.
Maybe he's going to go back to that Inuit
village. But then
you
can bring in other characters. There's room for Colossus. There's room for Dazzler. You could say that she survived.
Actually,
can't say Banshee survived because he's freaking dead.
We need another guy who does metal stuff.
Well, I would love for them, you know, because here's another thing they could do. If they wanted to go not the Krakoa, they could go the Outback route where they become like legends who can't be seen on camera, that kind of thing. Or you know, and then you could bring in Havoc, Dazzler.
Honestly, I think
love that too.
Honestly, I think that is a better route.
Don't think that's what they're going to do, but I would like to see
I think Mutants on the Run makes sense.
Yeah.
But they're going to want to stick with the characters they've developed.
Yeah.
They brought in Nightcrawler,
they got rid of Bishop. They've changed this season.
I would love for them to do kind of like a giant size X-Men where they bring in other mutants.
I would love to Psylocke, Dazzler, Longshot, and Havoc.
I don't know if we get all of those, but because you still have to have Cyclops, you still have to.
But you could bring those in along with those people. I don't know.
Yeah, the Havoc team could take the role of the new X-Men in saving the old team.
Because who did they tease? They teased Storm, they teased Forge, they teased Jean.
Yeah,
everybody. Wolverine.
Yeah, a lot of them are danger, yeah.
Yeah, you could do a whole new team and say that they're alive, but they're held captive, sort of beast in season one kind of thing.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't know what they're going to do. I will definitely be staying up late tonight to watch because I'm very excited. I mean, this is the thing I'm most excited to watch on TV right now.
Yeah.
Anything that's going.
They have really captured the serial power of these things and the soap operatics. It's like following the Gambit, Rogue, Magneto stuff, Jean and Scott, and Wolverine, and all of that stuff has been very exciting and fun.
I will stupidly destroy my sleep schedule even more and watch X-Men at 2:30 in the morning or 2
Just take a nap, Nick.
Take an early nap.
I can't do that anymore.
Sure you can.
It's just not.
You ever tried running into a wall?
No, you gotta take your downers for nap and then cocaine to watch X-Men 97.
Sure.
And then you create Megalopolis.
With action figures.
Got a few hours left of the night. Time to make Megalopolis.
All right. Last thing we want to talk about Abigail. May spoil some things. This is the vampire movie from the creators of Ready or Not.
Yep. I forget their name.
Oh, it's actually the creators?
Yeah, it's
the people
same.
Who made Ready or Not.
And Scream.
I just thought it was thematically similar.
Yeah, and the new Scream
And
stuff.
The Scream series, which I really liked. I really dug this. The trailer unfortunately gives away too much, but there's no way I don't know how you would have not given it away.
Yeah.
Kidnappers are holed up in a mansion with the little girl they kidnapped. Whoever organized it leaves them.
Yeah, they're supposed to have her for 24 hours. They're basically just supposed to be guarding her while her rich dad pays the kidnapper. And then they find out, oh no, she's a vampire.
But the cool thing about it is they don't do the vampire reveal until about 40 minutes in.
Yeah, we all know she's a vampire.
Yeah, unfortunately.
We don't get the reveal until later. And they're doing there's a lot of good character work.
It is.
Like all the people who are there, they're not supposed to use each other's real names, but there's one of them who sort of she sort of figures out something about each of them, sort of rattles off these things she's figured out about all of them.
Yeah, yeah. Played by Melissa Barrera.
Melissa Barrera from Scream. Kevin Durand, where do I know him from?
I mean, he's been in a bunch of stuff.
He plays he plays a super dumb guy.
The guy from Euphoria who recently passed away.
Oh, yeah.
He plays kind of like a wheelman, but he's a... Yep. Like his normal self, I would assume.
Yeah, yeah. Because
that's who he played on Euphoria.
Yeah.
Catherine Newton plays a hacker.
Catherine Newton is great in this.
Yeah, she's amazing. She gets
a good ensemble in there, that they're not just, like, nameless.
No, that's what the show... That's what the movie's about, is their characters. Yeah. And who's the other...
Then there's the sniper, military guy.
Who's the main guy? Like the main...
Not Matthew Dan, Good.
It's Dan, Dan Stevens.
Dan Stevens.
Dan Stevens is like the...
Slimy ex-cop.
He's a slimy ex-cop who was basically the head of the whole thing. And he and Marissa Barrera have sort of a will-they-won't-they, but also an enemy kind of thing going.
A kill-they-won't-they.
Kill-they-won't-they. A kill-they-won't-they.
But,
I like that.
But I will say... I think you might enjoy this, Dave. It's It is not the kind of campy, silly... it has some brains behind
it. Yeah, no, it's
interesting.
It's well done.
I was really impressed with the amount of, like, character work that they were able to pack in like, a small amount of time.
How old is the girl in it?
She's 9 years old.
9 years, okay. Yeah.
And what I remember it is that, like, she's, like, got ballerina training, and so she's, like, gliding around, and I'm flipping and shit.
Yeah.
And her, like, ballerina outfit just killing people, apparently.
Yeah. And she's impressive. She can hold her own.
Yeah, that was my question: is how was her performance?
She's
great.
She's very scary.
Yeah, they have her in a cage for part of it, and you're like, oh, they're still screwed.
I love the fact that the vampires are like, they immediately like, oh shit, she's a vampire. What do we know about vampires?
And then they don't know what's true and what's not. You know, right. We don't know if that works.
Yeah, that's
crosses actually work or garlic works.
That would be the case nowadays, is just that there's too many overlapping and stories.
It's the basically thing I want in like a zombie thing. It's like, oh, they're zombies.
They're zombies. What does that mean? Yeah.
Yeah, what do we do for zombies?
Yeah.
It's just one of those things that kind of Shaun of the Dead-ish.
Yeah.
But, I was really impressed with this movie.
Same. And it's got some funny bits, but it's also got some really nice... It's got some good character stuff.
I liked it better than Ready or Not.
I did, too. I think ultimately I came around to it to liking it more than Ready or Not. Although I really like Ready or Not.
I did, too. I mean, Samara Weaving is great.
Yeah.
This cast is a little bit... I mean, the cast in Ready or Not is good.
Yeah.
Annie McDowell and...
Yeah, this is really good. These guys... I will pretty much watch anything these guys do, because I love their Scream trilogy. I really liked Ready or Not, and I really liked this. I would say... Worth a look. And the trailer gives away the premise, but it does not give away the movie.
Correct.
Yeah, the moment-to-moment is not in the trailer. Yeah.
Nope.
So
cool.
And there's some cool twists,
too.
Yeah,
yeah. Okay.
Does she kill them all?
She does not kill them all.
Yay!
All right. That's going to wrap it up for us. We'll be back next week with more. And until that time,
Yo, Joe.
Roguecast is a weekly podcast broadcast from Rogues Gallery Comics and Games in Round Rock, Texas. You can find us online on Facebook and at www.roguesgallerytx.com and email us comments or questions at roguesgallerytx@gmail.com. Thanks for listening.